In this day of economic uncertainty and soaring unemployment, safe investments are often hard to find. But investing in the precious metals is the safest investment of all, because gold and silver is real money. Government-printed currency is not. Call Melody Cedarstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company at 1-800-375-4188. Melody has been helping people secure their financial future for over 10 years. While others in the business claim honesty, Melody will deliver. Give her a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
To the broadcast, American Expo Day. I'm Darren Weeks. This is the 22nd of February, 2005, and thanks for joining us again tonight on another broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, as we continue to expose the New World Order and worldwide globalism, worldwide socialism under the guise of democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to get right into the show because there's a lot of things going on, and there's no way I'm going to be able to cover it all tonight. That's frequently my dilemma as I come on this broadcast, deciding what's most important and what should be left for another day, and we never cover it all. But I guess that's why there's others to pick up the slack. Folks, we interviewed about a month ago on this program Barbara Weller, who is attorney of the Schindlers. This Terry Schiavo case, it continues to go forward, and it continues to be a problem. And today was supposed to be the day that Michael Schiavo was again to deny feeding of Terry, his wife. Now, for those of you who are not aware, this thing's been going on for well over a decade. I think it's something like 12 or 13 years that Michael Schiavo, the husband of Terry Schindler Schiavo, has been pursuing his wife's death. And he claims that his reason for doing so is because she wouldn't want to be left on life support. Well, she's not, as Barbara Weller pointed out in this program about a month ago, Terry's not really on any life support. She's been being fed through a tube, but the tube isn't attached to her all the time. And she's has no less than 10 separate doctors have stated that Terry has a lot of potential at recovery. Well, let me just read this to you. In the admitting summary for an October 2002 court hearing, the ER records were reviewed, and it was plainly noted that Terry had a rigid neck. The doctors who reviewed the records testified that the only other patient he'd ever seen with that type of injury had been a strangulation victim. This goes to the heart of the whole case, folks, because why won't Michael Schiavo just walk away? Why won't he leave and let the family have custody of Terry? Why does he insist upon pursuing her death? That's what my question is for you tonight. There was a court ruling today which granted the Schindler family, Terry's family, a stay, so Michael wasn't able to deny her feeding again. But she's still under the guillotine, so to speak. She's still under she's not in the clear on this by any stretch. In fact, it could very well be that tomorrow, the delay was only for a day, so it could very well be that tomorrow he turns around and starts the process of denying her food again. A bone scan. This was the bone scan I referenced on the broadcast that we did with Barbara Weller a month ago. A bone scan was done 53 weeks after Terry's collapse, revealing that Terry had fractured ribs, damage to her pelvic area, the LI vertebrae, spine, both knees and ankles, a broken femur, and she had a broken back. And they just say that she collapsed. Yeah, she had a heart attack. That's what it was. If anybody believes that, they got something bad wrong with them. No less than three doctors concluded that Terry had endured trauma of some sort, and the radiologist responsible for the scan plainly stated that the patient has a history of trauma. So what is Michael Schiavo hiding here? What is the purpose of this guy, and why won't he move on since he's already he already has another woman, by which I understand he has two children, and Terry is just apparently holding up his future with the person that he wants to marry, who must be dumb as a post anyway to see what he's doing to his former wife and to still want to be with him. But that's a matter of a different sort. But folks, I urge you to pray for Terry and to do what you can to get the truth out about it, because the media is still saying she's comatose. They're still saying she's in a persistent vegetative state. None of that is true. And the reason we talk about the Terry Schiavo case, folks, is because it has ramifications for all of us. If they get away with killing this woman, starving this woman to death, killing this woman by dehydration, then none of us are safe when we get to be elderly. And she's not an elderly person, but she's certainly a disabled person. If any of us get elderly or disabled, what are the ramifications? We're seeing this slippery slope be put into place here, and it's cause for great concern. And the family issued a statement today. They said in their statement, while the family of Terry Schiavo is grateful for the stay issued today by Judge George Greer of Pinellas County, Florida's 6th Judicial Court, they continue to be hopeful that the court will allow the numerous outstanding legal issues in Terry's case to be resolved before any action to end their daughter's life is taken. Recent advances in neurological testing may be better suited to determining Terry's true cognizant state, and the Schindlers would like them to be made available so that no doubt about their daughter's condition remains. And I'm not going to read the entire statement because there's a lot more going on here that I want to cover tonight. But, folks, this is a very important issue, and that's why we keep coming back to it. And I urge you to pray for this situation. And if God moves upon your heart to write letters to the judge, this is such a huge miscarriage of justice. And it certainly opens my eyes as to the degree to which our courts are corrupt. And, of course, Linda Kennedy has covered that many times in the past, as she was disbarred for exposing corruption in the courts. And this is just yet the latest example of activist court and the fact that we have legislative lawmaking bodies in this country, and the courts run roughshod over the lawmaking bodies. One comment that stands out in my mind that Barbara said last month when we talked to her, I asked her the question about that, about are we approaching a one-branch system of government? And she says she thinks that we're already there. When a legislative body can make a law and the courts can strike down that law, what do we have, folks? Why do we even have a separation of powers? Why do we even have legislative bodies? That's the question. And all of this corruption is coming down and has infiltrated America, and few actually know about it. Meanwhile, at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court certainly allowed this to happen, as Terry's law, there was an issue before the Supreme Court, and they did not rule in her favor. And that was January 21st, I believe, is when that decision was handed down. Meanwhile, before the Supreme Court today, I'm looking at an article that's going to appear in tomorrow's Washington Post. That's right, I got it somehow a day in advance, but the headline, and it's going to be in page A6 of tomorrow's Washington Post, and the headline is Defining Limits of Eminent Domain. And we warned you this is coming. This is an issue right now before the Supreme Court. High Court weighs city's claim to land. This is a biggie, folks. Charles Lane writes in the Washington Post, that's going to be published tomorrow, an attorney for the group of Connecticut homeowners told the Supreme Court yesterday, and of course that was today, because this is written for tomorrow, that his clients have a constitutional right to stay in their houses even though their city says it needs the site for privately developed offices, hotels, and parking, in a case that could affect private property rights across the country. The lawyer, Scott G. Bullock of the Libertarian Institute for Justice, said that if New London, Connecticut, can use its power of eminent domain to force Suzette Kilo and six other owners to sell for the sake of jobs and tax revenue private sector development brings, then the Fifth Amendment guarantee that private property cannot be taken for public use without just compensation would be a dead letter. Bullock said, quote, every home, church, or corner store would produce more jobs and tax revenues if it were a Costco or a shopping mall, unquote. The court seemed conflicted about the issue, with members of the court posing equally demanding questions of each side. There were two empty chairs at the bench, with Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist absent because of illness and Justice John Paul Stevens out because his flight from Florida, where he maintains a home, had been canceled. That created an opportunity for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, the most senior remaining justice, to become the first woman to preside over an oral argument at the court. Sounding skeptical that there could be a blanket rule against using eminent domain to promote private redevelopment, O'Connor pressed Bullock repeatedly to say under what circumstances it might be allowable. When Bullock suggested that a minimum standard might be to require cities to show there is a good chance that the promise of public benefits of redevelopment might materialize, O'Connor replied, quote, do you really want the courts in the business of deciding whether a hospital will be successful or a road will be successful, unquote. When Wesley W. Horton rose to argue on New London's behalf, O'Connor asked whether it would be okay for a city to replace a Motel 6 with a Ritz-Carlton, quote, if the city felt the Ritz-Carlton could pay more taxes, end quote. Horton said yes, prompting several justices to pepper him with questions about the basic fairness of shifting resources from one set of private owners to another, richer set. Justice Antonin Scalia said, quote, what this lady, Kilo, wants is not more money. She says, I'll move if it's for the good of the, for the public good, but not just so that someone else can pay more taxes. This is an objection in principle that public use in the Constitution seems to be addressed to, unquote. Relying on post-World War II Supreme Court decisions that broadened the definition of public use to include not only roads or bridges, but also slum clearance and land redistribution, cities have used eminent domain frequently to foster private sector redevelopment in recent years. Especially in the Northeast, it is a way to spur revitalization in old urban centers when underdeveloped suburban land is running out. Why is underdeveloped suburban land running out, ladies and gentlemen? There's the question that you need answered. Why is it running out? How much more land is being put off limits as conservation areas and wildlife refuges? The article continues. Between 1998 and 2002, more than 10,000 threatened or filed condemnations involved a transfer of property from one private party to another in 41 states, the Institute for Justice reports, with states using various definitions of public use to justify them. In a front-of-the-court brief supporting New London, the National League of Cities called eminent domain often indispensable for revitalizing local economies. Who is the National League of Cities? Why do we have a National League of Cities? I insert. The brief cited the Kansas Speedway, which generated tens of millions of dollars in economic activity for Kansas City, Kansas, and surrounding Wyandotte County after it was built on land that had been held by private homeowners. New London is opposed by such organizations as the NAACP and AARP, which argued that minorities and the elderly are often the victims of eminent domain abuse. New London's redevelopment strategy seeks to capitalize on a 1998 decision by pharmaceutical giant Pfizer. That name just keeps coming up again and again, doesn't it? pharmaceutical giant Pfizer to locate a research facility in the town by surrounding that site with new marinas, office space, a hotel and conference center, and high-end housing, as well as parking for a new state park. Critics say the benefits of the proposed complex are uncertain, while the attachment to their homes of such long-time residents is Wilhelmina and Charles Deary, ages 87 and 85, respectively, is clear. The case is Kelo versus New London, number 04-108. A decision is expected by July. So there you have it. Your private property rights, and that's what you need to think about. This is not just a local case, folks. This is the Supreme Court. Your private property rights are before the Supreme Court right now. And that ought to give every American reason to shudder. Because this shows you the degree to which we have a democracy in this country. Democracy is socialism. And this fits right into the whole situation where, well, certainly the Communist Manifesto, one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, is the elimination of private property rights to public use. A transfer of private property rights to public use. And what do you say? We have our country slipping away from us under the guise of democracy and socialism, redistribution of the wealth, and this is Agenda 21 being implemented here. As land becomes more and more scarce, the land that's left over will be hotly contested. And if you are not able to produce the way that they feel that you should be able to produce using the land, you'll not use the land. You'll not have the ability to own and control land. And that's the problem. That's what we're seeing happening all across America right now. So there's a case to watch. As the outcome of this case, there's going to be a lot of people at the county level, in various states, in various counties, all across the country, going to be watching. They're going to be watching this particular court decision. So this is very important. And meanwhile, somebody sent me this. This is, and by the way, thank you to Dennis for the various things that you sent. There's so many things, folks, that he's been busy again doing research, and I appreciate all of the stuff that you sent me. And I have not had a chance to go through it all, but it's a lot of good stuff, and maybe I'm going to cover some of it on Friday's program. Anyway, somebody sent me this piece, this letter from the Project for the New American Century. This, by the way, folks, is the same neocon think tank that gave us the PNAC report called Rebuilding America's Defenses, which I call the blueprint for the war on terror, because they wrote this thing, they published it September of 2000, a full year before September 11th and before the November 2000 elections. And they followed this blueprint that the PNAC wrote on behalf of Rumsfeld and, you know, the Bushes and the various other people who are in power right now. They followed this thing to a T. And that's why I keep referring to it. And by the way, we have that link to the article, which came out of the Sunday Herald out of Britain. We have that linked up on AmericanExpose.com now. American spelled with a K, not a C. The PNAC report, it's called Read the PNAC Report Proving the War on Terror Was Planned Before September 11th. And I urge you to go in and read that article and then link over to the PNAC report. The headline of the article is Bush Planned Iraq Regime Change Before Becoming President. This is one of the most damning pieces of evidence that September 11th was pre-planned and executed by those within our own government, namely the Bushes and their handlers. But at any rate, this this letter was transmitted, and this is dated January 28, 2005, and it was transmitted to Congress by the PNAC, the Project for a New American Century. And they said, Dear Senator Frist, Senator Reid, Senator Hastert, and Representative Pelosi, the United States military is too small for the responsibilities we are asking it to assume. Those responsibilities are real and important. They are not going away. The United States will not and should not become less engaged in the world in the years to come. But our national security, global peace and stability, and the defense and promotion of freedom in the post-9/11 world would require a larger military force than we have today. The administration has unfortunately resisted increasing our ground forces to the size needed to meet today's and tomorrow's missions and challenges. First of all, I don't think the administration is resisting that at all. My sources are telling me that Bush has been quietly lobbying Congress behind the scenes. However, they're understanding that this whole draft issue is a very hotbed issue. It's a hot-button issue. But don't think that they won't try it, and in fact, they already have tried it. They continue. They say, so we write to ask you and your colleagues in the legislative branch to take steps necessary to increase substantially the size of the active Army and Marine Corps. While estimates vary about just how large an increase is required, and Congress will make its own determination as to size and structure, it is our judgment that we should aim for an increase in the active duty Army and Marine Corps together of at least 25,000 troops each year over the next several years. I want to say that again. They said it is our judgment that we should aim for an increase in the active duty Army and Marine Corps together of at least 25,000 troops each year over the next several years. There is abundant evidence that the demands of the ongoing missions of the greater Middle East, along with our continuing defense and alliance commitments elsewhere in the world, are close to exhausting current U.S. ground forces. For example, just late last month, Lieutenant General James Helmley, Chief of the Army Reserve, reported that overuse in Iraq and Afghanistan could be leading to a broken force. Yet after almost 2 years in Iraq and almost 3 years in Afghanistan, it should be evident that our engagement in the greater Middle East is truly, in Condoleezza Rice's terms, a general commitment. The only way to fulfill the military aspect of this commitment is by increasing the size of the force available to our civilian leadership. The administration has been reluctant to adapt to this new reality. We understand the dangers of continued federal deficits and the fiscal difficulty of increasing the number of troops, but the defense of the United States is the first priority of the government. This nation can afford a robust defense posture, along with a strong fiscal posture. We're a bankrupt country, folks. Anyway, they say, and we can afford both the necessary number of ground troops and what is needed for transformation of the military. In sum, we can afford the military we need. As a nation, we're spending a smaller percentage of our gross domestic product on the military than at any time during the Cold War. Uh-huh. Well, that seems to conflict with something else I've read. They say, we do not propose returning to the Cold War size or shape force structure. We do insist that we act responsibly to create the military we need to fight the war on terror and fulfill our other responsibilities around the world. The men and women of our military have performed magnificently over the last few years. We are more proud of them than we can say. But many of them would be the first to say that the armed forces are too small. And we would say that surely we should be doing more to honor the contract between America and those who serve in her war. Or those who serve her in war. Reserves were meant to be reserves, not regulars. Our regulars are reserves. Our regulars and reserves are not only proving themselves as warriors, but as humanitarians and builders of emerging democracies. There you go, emerging democracies. Our armed forces, active and reserve, are once again proving their value to the nation. We can honor their sacrifices by giving them the manpower and the material they need. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution places the power and the duty to raise and support the military forces of the United States in the hands of Congress. That is why we, the undersigned, a bipartisan group with diverse policy views, except for globalism, have come together to call upon you to act. You will be serving your country well if you insist on providing the military manpower we need. We need. Who's we? The military manpower we need to meet America's obligations and to help ensure success in carrying out our foreign policy objectives in a dangerous but also hopeful world. But what are our obligations? What is America's obligations? To police the world? To go in and conquer? To conquer every country that doesn't go along with what we say? Anyway, it's signed by a bunch of people. And I'm not going to read all the names, but it's the usual suspects. But ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. The Project for the New American Century, and that was January 28th. It's unfortunate that it hasn't come to my attention sooner. Now, somebody sent me also a copy of a bill calling for the draft. I went in and researched that bill and discovered that particular one had been apparently tabled. But I'm sure there's others, and I'm sure that they have the capability, as they often do, of inserting this stuff within other legislative pieces, other pieces of legislation. So we have to be ever vigilant, folks. But we have to decide whether we're going to let our children die for the New World Order. And that's what this all comes down to. As I move along, running out of time, and see we're almost at the halfway point of the broadcast already. Here we see, getting back to the environmentalism situation and Agenda 21, this is from the Asbury Press in New Jersey, and it's headlined Green Homes and NJ First, Eco-Friendly Residential Development in Tewksbury. This is a piece dated February 17th of 2005. It says, green is now more than just a paint color for prospective buyers of luxury real estate in this upscale Hunterdon County community. The township is the site of the state's first green or eco-friendly luxury residential development, an exclusive enclave of four multi-million dollar homes that are intended to improve, not deplete, the health and vitality of soil, groundwater, and plant and wildlife habitat through innovative design. What is this? This is a sustainable community, folks. That's what this is. A sustainable community. The development, Fern Valley, is the lifelong dream of landscape architect Anthony Sublendiario. He is the principal of Back to Nature Landscapes Associates, an Old Wick-based landscape architecture firm that employs 40 people and has promoting natural landscaping, has been promoting natural landscaping for more than 11 years. Energy-saving features available to the houses will include sensors that dim the lights or turn them off, super-insulated roofs and windows, and natural heating and cooling features. A reduction in energy costs in green buildings ranging from 20 to 50% is not uncommon, said Ed McMahon, senior resident fellow with the Washington, D.C.-based Urban Land Institute. Well, we got to take a break here, folks. We're going to continue this on the other side of the break. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, and we have a lot more to go, as I'm going to be talking when we come back about a sustainable development department that has developed in Northampton County, Virginia. Yes, that's right. Their sustainable development department. They have their own department now in Virginia. Stay with us.
opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. JPFO.org.
Be sure to listen to the Church at Cahuilla every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Cahuilla is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact the Church at Cahuilla by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cedarstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Broadcast American Exposé. Go to the website AmericanExposé.com. American spelled with a K, not a C. And you can go do a lot of research on Agenda 21, sustainable development, because it's our future if it's not stopped, folks. It is the reason private property rights are being undermined all across this country, and it's the reason for the Supreme Court case going on right now, today, before the Supreme Court. And just one little comment about that Supreme Court case, and then I'll get back to the piece I was reading before the break. Article 5 of the amendments to the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment, as it's called, says no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, or in any person, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Now, if I was writing this today, I think I would write private property cannot be taken without just compensation and without the consent of the seller. This is why I believe some people actually believe that the framers of the Constitution framed us, because that's the question before the court right now. Taken for public use land should not be taken for public use anyway. If land can be taken for public use or taken away for any reason, then it's not really your land, is it? Do you really have private property rights? Now, Article 9 of the amendment, the Ninth Amendment, says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. In other words, the Constitution lists certain rights. If other rights are not listed, that does not mean people do not have those rights. So in other words, anything, any rights that are not specifically limited are rights that can be assumed that the people have. So I just wanted to point that out, ladies and gentlemen. Getting back to this piece here, Green Homes and New Jersey First. We're seeing sustainable development being implemented in various areas across the country. What is sustainable development? It comes from the United Nations Agenda 21. They continue. They say homes that are properly designed can contribute to the renewal of natural resources through such means as rainwater harvesting for irrigation, as well as landscaping with native plants that allow stormwater to penetrate the ground instead of lawns that promote stormwater runoff. Other features that increase groundwater recharge include encouraging the growth of deep-rooted trees, such as oaks, that break up the subsoil, and creating pocket wetlands with plants such as cattails and sedges. Combined with basins beneath the surface, these purify stormwater before it enters the aquifer, Sublendorio said. He said his motivation to build homes stemmed from growing up in the nation's most densely populated state in one of its most densely populated suburbs. Bergen County's Waldick, made up predominantly of modest houses on small lots, is situated on Route 17, for which the term strip development might have been invented. Though the green building movement is taking off, with green commercial buildings no longer uncommon, green housing developments are still unusual because the developer's instinct is to stay with the tried and true rather than going out on a limb. He says, nobody likes to be first. That was stated by Athena Seraphides. I don't know where these people get these names. But this person is a research scientist at the State Department of Environmental Protection's Bureau of Sustainable Communities and Innovative Technology, who called Fern Valley unique in the state. Interesting that the state of Virginia, or no, I'm sorry, New Jersey. The state of New Jersey has a Department of Environmental Protection, Bureau of Sustainable Communities. Did you know that, folks? A Bureau of Sustainable Communities in the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. Interesting. Very interesting. The National Association of Home Builders reports that greenhouses still comprise less than 1% of the nation's total, but that number is on the rise. Between 1990 and 2001, about 19,000 houses were certified as green by various state and national programs, compared with about 13,000 in 2002 alone. Green building is becoming mainstreamed very fast, said McMahon. It no longer conjures up images of geodesic domes and rammed earth cabins. Sublendorio's aim is simple: demonstrate that it is possible to build a residential development that gives to the land more than it takes. He said it's frustrating to try to convince others to do this without it having been done before. The best way to show it can be done was to do it ourselves. More than 2 years in the planning, the ecologically inspired neighborhood, as he calls it, features four houses on lots ranging in size from 3 to 7 acres. The houses are on a site in which the choicest property, the 8.3 acres along a trout stream with two ponds, has been set aside as a communal open land. From a development standpoint, the site is a difficult one, heavily forested, with steep slopes on wetlands. But that is part of its appeal. Sublindorio said he wanted to demonstrate that a green development could be built under conditions that do not meet the ideal of flat, open farmland. An unbuilt 6,134-square-foot spec house, a 13-room farmstead-style structure with clapboard siding and a cedar shingled roof, is now on the market for $2.3 million. Customers can buy the other lots starting at $595,000 and bring in their own designers and builders or work with Sublindorio's team to create their dream house. So the article goes on, and I don't want to share the whole thing because it's kind of lengthy. Anyway, he says, it goes, moreover, customers get a house that is perfectly suited to their needs rather than a house that may have features they don't want or lack those that they do. I think I'm going to leave that there. But there you have a sustainable community, or sustainable housing anyway, being built in New Jersey. And then we have a Northampton County Sustainable Development Department, also in New Jersey. And they have a website. And it's www.co.northampton.va.us/departments/develop. And I realize I've done that awful fast. I'll put that link up on AmericanExposé.com tonight after the broadcast for your perusal. This Northampton County, Virginia Sustainable Development Department says sustainable development means building an economy for today which doesn't leave our children with less natural wealth for their future, and one which doesn't drive them away from the Eastern Shore for jobs and amenities. The county developed a Sustainable Development Action Strategy in the mid-1990s to identify our valuable natural resources and to identify a roadmap for creating a more diverse economy which will also protect those natural resources. Target industries which have been pursued in this effort are ecotourism and sustainable technologies. The Department of Sustainable Development is responsible for planning and implementing economic development in a manner that preserves and enhances the county's natural, cultural, and historic resources for the benefit of all of the county's people. This includes facilitating recruitment and creation of new business and retention and expansion of existing business. The department is responsible for initiating and coordinating action to develop the county's target industry areas and preserve the vital assets on which these industries depend for their ongoing successes. The county is recognized as the first local government in America to formally create a Department of Sustainable Development, integrating economic development, environmental protection, and human equity. Human equity. And what is human equity? It's another word for socialism. Environmental protection, ladies and gentlemen, is being used. Being used as a pretense to take land away from you. And that's what's going on today. Now, one person who's recently been turned on to Agenda 21 is a woman by the name of Nancy Levin. And she's talking about the UN. Here's a piece that she wrote, UN Hides Agenda with Conservation Army. She says, Conservancy and wildland groups are not friends of nature. In fact, some have recently signed deals with the Army Corps of Engineers, who together are now singing the praises of controlled flooding. I suggest you be careful about living in or buying property downstream of dams, she says. That's no joke. And the primary functions of conservancy and wildland groups are to forcefully take lands that belong to the American people, both public and private lands. That is their sole function, for they are the implementation army of Agenda 21, these conservation army. Agenda 21 is an important document that American people must quickly understand in detail before it becomes unavailable. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, not a C. Click on the icon, click here to learn about Agenda 21. That'll take you to the Agenda 21 section, and there is a downloadable PDF file, which is read with Adobe Acrobat Reader. where you can download the entire thing from AmericanExpose.com if it ever becomes unavailable. I suggest you keep a copy of this document. She continues. She says, Agenda 21 is the actual plan to implement the UN's goal of becoming the governing power of the world. That means that all countries will operate as one government, with one set of rules, one language, one interfaith belief, which means no specific god and or the elimination of faith, and a call to reduce the human population by approximately 40%. This plan is currently being implemented globally using a public and media cover-up called conservation. Agenda 21 calls for a new conservation-based belief system which the entire world must adhere to. It calls for the total transformation of human behaviors, beliefs, and lifestyles. Al Gore, who was instrumental in inviting this beast into our country, said that Agenda 21 would create a wrenching transformation of society. Boy, was he right. The transformation of society in the United States is called sustainable development. You will see and read sustainable this and sustainable that. You will see words like bio, eco, green, smart growth, local 21, visioning, corridors, buffer zones, resting forest, and ecosystems. NGOs, that is non-governmental organizations, public-private partnerships, stakeholders, and so on and so on and so on. Type your town's name, a comma, and then type the word sustainable development. See what comes up. As we speak, our country and every city and village across the nation is witnessing private organizations and businesses taking over water companies. They determine usage limits and requirements as our government hands our natural resources over to these NGO groups, many of whom have received NGO status from the United Nations and their partners. Government-controlled water entitled us to information about our water. Not anymore. Governments all over the world are shifting to government by private, public-private partnership. This is why they refer to, by the way, folks, as governance, this system being governance. Because what is governance? Well, it could include rule by the government, but it can also include rule by any other group or number of groups. That's what governance is. It's a form of, well, governance. It's rule over the people. It's control of the population of people, but not necessarily by the government. She says this is the very definition of fascism. The United Nations is nearing full world power. It is missing a rapid deployment force. In 2000, Bill Clinton called for 6,000 American soldiers to be permanently assigned to the United Nations Rapid Deployment Army. They want an initial army of 42,000. I don't know how large their army is today, she says. The United Nations is also laying plans for global taxation. One example of is the Law of the Seas Treaty. If passed, which Condoleezza Rice recently stated would pass, the United Nations will have a non-stop funding base by taxing all use, commercial and private, of the oceans. This is how militaries and weapons capabilities grow. And I believe, she says, this is also a security issue for the United Nations, for the United States. The UN is searching for a way to provide lip service to international representation by claiming to want a People's Millennium Assembly, a supposed method by which the people of the world may have a voice or a day in court. The World Court is already in place. Agenda 21, as a written plan for global implementation, is currently attempting to become law, international law. International law trumps national law. Well, I want to take issue with that statement for just a minute. International law does not trump national law, ladies and gentlemen. The only time international law trumps national law is when the governmental leaders, the traitors that we have at the federal level, acquiesce to it. National sovereignty can be reclaimed at any time if the traitors in our federal government would do so. So I just want to I take issue with that statement that she made there. But continuing, she says, as a writer, I can tell you that I have never held such a profound sense of responsibility. How do I get my countrymen to believe that our way of life, our government, our values, our and everything we are and know to be true is coming to an end. Did you hear that? This is what I've been saying all along, ladies and gentlemen. I've been talking about how revolutionary this plan is. And maybe I'm preaching to the choir here. And I realize that Agenda 21 and environmentalism and all that stuff doesn't sound flashy. It's not sensationalistic. It might not be entertaining to listen to. But, folks, we've got to talk about it. We have to talk about it and we have to address it. Because this demon is staring us straight in the face. And it's already affecting the way people live. She says, as a writer, I can tell you that I have never held such a profound sense of responsibility. She says, how do I get my countrymen to believe that our way of life, our government, our values, and everything we are and know to be true is coming to an end? She says, how do I get them to believe that the conservation manipulations created by the United Nations are the lies and methods used to deliver global governance behind our backs? A massive bureaucratic web masterminded for stealing everything of value on the planet, and a pre-planned elimination of human interference, which includes a reduction of human life by nearly half. That is the true definition of Agenda 21. And by the way, I'll say that this reduction of human life is certainly underway as we have the wars going on, which were orchestrated for no legitimate purpose, as terrorism goes on, which is orchestrated by the same people who are orchestrating the wars. And now the draft is coming, which will seek to pull more and more people to be used as cannon fodder for population reduction. And now we have these so-called natural disasters, which I totally believe are orchestrated, as we have weather modification, climate manipulation going on all around the world. I read you the piece last Friday about the HAARP program. HAARP is adding something like over 700 more antennas to its array. For what purpose is HAARP doing this? What is HAARP doing with sending RF into the atmosphere? What's the ionospheric manipulation that's going on? What purpose is that supposed to be? Research? What kind of research? What are they researching? Why do we have cloud seeding going on? What purpose does that serve when we have certain floods in certain areas? And then those floods, as California has gotten a lot of rain, I understand Nevada, parts of the Nevada desert, are starting to bloom now. And all of this is being blamed on greenhouse gas emissions. Folks, we're being lied to. We're being manipulated at every turn. She continues, she says, again, the goal of the United Nations is to reduce the human population by approximately 40% and to monitor and control the natural resources, which are the assets of the world, forest, timber, fresh and salt water, all minerals, animal and plant crop life. We, the humans, being problematic, need to be eliminated by half, as it has been declared. She says, in my opinion, when the death of nearly half the human population is considered good politics and conservation, it's way past time for our government to talk to us about global governance, the conservation of American people, the taking of American lands and water, and, oh, one more thing, road removal. Many, many, many organizations have dedicated themselves to removing roads that lead to the mountains, the fresh waters, the beaches, the forests, etc. That's why, folks, the NAFTA corridors are so important. Continuing, she says, here's one group that you really need to check into. Wildland CPR, Center for Preventing Roads. Equally and importantly, the road removal implementation project called Road RIP. These organizations are connected to the Wildlands Project. And folks, I urge you to go in and read the mission of the Wildlands Project. Their website, wildlandsproject.org. Go in there and find the mission statement. You'll be blown away. As basically they say everything that we've been saying all along. They demonize human beings. Human beings have been using the land for thousands of years. The land has been here. The land is very resilient. Yet, they say we're destroying it. She continues, she says, they are intent upon removing roads to eliminate our ability to get to the lands they are stealing. We paid for those roads, and mobility is power. Soon, only conservationists, NGOs, and business and landowners will be driving. As I've said before, entrapment in human settlements, read sustainable communities, makes Agenda 21 looking more and more like keepers of passive human cages. Pandemics? Enforced quarreling causes human health problems. It also mimics really ugly history. She says, see newswithviews.com for Henry Lamb's latest. It just keeps getting worse at the UN. And remember, please, please pass all your information on to everyone you know. You can reach hundreds, even thousands of people and families in minutes and hours with emails that keep going. Ask people to read, keep learning, and building the momentum. So there you have it, Nancy Levin, writing another excellent piece on Agenda 21. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to get this information out. We have to get this information out to the general public somehow. And I guess my suggestion would be, let's start renting billboards. Chris has suggested starting to get bumper stickers printed. If anybody knows where we can get bumper stickers printed to get this message out, let me know, or let Chris Gerner know. Because we got to be focused on solutions at this late date, ladies and gentlemen, as people are losing their land right now, and something has got to be done to put a stop to it. So I urge you to do your research. Go to sweetliberty.org. Check out the regional governance section. Check out the United Nations section. In fact, I think it's in the regional governance section of sweetliberty.org that you can get to. You can find out, I think there's a book by Phoebe Courtney, Beware Metro Regional Governance. And that's an excellent resource for you to read and review, as regional governance, folks, was necessary. And that's the means by which they're implementing this whole plan of sustainable development. I want to say thank you for being with us this week. And I'll be back Friday. Chris Gerner will be back tomorrow and Thursday. Support Melody Cedarstrom and the Discount Gold and Silver Trading. DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net is the website, the newly designed website. And we're going to be doing more for that in the coming days. Thank you for being with us. God bless you. And have a good night. Pray for Terry.
In America, we value our liberty. But there's a new movement quietly being pursued by politicians that will take away our precious freedoms. It's been deceptive.